All right, everybody, we are back. It is another episode of Inside Boxing Live presented by PPV.com. Dan Canobio, Chris Algieri coming to you on April 21st, Monday, April 21st, post 420. Chris Algieri, noted pothead. How are you?
Not true. Erroneous statement. Post Easter. I am a notorious Easter fan. So I had a lot of fun yesterday. Some family over, cooked a big hunk of beast.
Saw that.
And, Sunday fun days. Nice fun time with the fam.
It was a beautiful Easter for those who celebrate. In line with 420. That's got to be some overlapping there of, you know, kids going out smoking weed, coming back eating all the chocolate.
And also the Pope dying the day after.
Wild.
On Easter Monday, which is pretty, pretty wild, right?
I don't know. He had some boxing ties.
Did he?
WBC, Mauricio Sulaiman struck up a friendship with him. And Sulaiman posted a bunch of stuff. There's always boxing ties. Even the Pope is somehow connected.
Even the Pope is connected to boxing. But we're talking about it today. It was just funny. It's like Jesus is like, I'm risen and you're going down. I'm coming up, you're going down.
It is some freaky coincidence there. There's some weird stuff going on with that. But
yeah. That's
our religious portion of the episode. Don't want to offend. Probably offended someone, even with that small little piece of that little nugget right there. Just reporting the news. It was an awesome weekend. Fights were okay. We will talk about some fights that happened this past weekend. Ben Whitaker, Charles Cromwell, Gabriella Fundora. We'll talk about some fights that were made. We'll talk about a little bit of everything, but this episode is brought to you by PPV.com, leader in live pay-per-view events, whether it's AEW, whether it's live boxing. You can catch us in that live chat, and you don't have to subscribe to anything. You go fight by fight, stream to your phone, tablet, big screen TV, take it anywhere. You can watch it on planes. Chris has before. I've watched it while driving. Don't recommend that to anyone out there, but that's just how I'm built. I'm built different. PPV.com is not liable for that, but they are a big presenting sponsor of our program, allowing us to do it 2 days a week.
Inside Boxing Live is not liable for that either.
Inside Boxing Live Productions, not liable for that. LLC, not liable for that as well. Thank you to Inside Boxing Live. No, thank you to PPV.com and Inside That's Boxing right. Live. Let's start off the show with a fight announcement. We heard about this Ring Magazine card that was going to have Shakur Stevenson and William Zepeda on it, but we didn't know that it was going to have three other really good fights.
Good fights.
This is a solid card announced. Ring Magazine 3, they're calling it. So I guess Ring Magazine 1 is this weekend with Ben and Eubank. Ring Magazine 2 is May 2nd. With Ryan Garcia, Rolly Romero, Teofimo, and Haney. And then this is Ring Magazine 3, July 12th, New York City, undisclosed location, headlined by Edgar Belanga, taking on Hamza Shiraz, which is a little bit of a surprise. Shakur Stevenson, co-main event, William Zepeda. We've been talking about that fight forever. Maybe a little surprised that it's the co-main event. Alberto Puello will be defending his title at 140 against Subriel Matias, which should be a fun fight. And then David Morrell versus Iman Katiev, who is a 10-0 Russian knockout artist. Very, very solid card. Evenly distributed card. Berlanga, Hamza, Shiraz at the top. Like that.
I like it a lot. I think it's a very risky fight for both guys. And like as you said, Dan, a little surprising. A little surprising that this fight's happening. But, you know, obviously we know the relationship that Hamza has with Turkey, but coming over to New York, fighting a New York guy, Berlanga, in the main event. First fight at 168, fighting a very big, good punching 68 pounder in Berlanga. It's a risky fight. That's a risky first fight at 168. And it's a risky fight for Berlanga because up until Shiraz's last fight against Carlos Adamas, when he fought for the title and was gifted a draw, he's looked like a world beater. So interesting where these guys are at in terms of their careers. A lot of questions. You know, Berlanga obviously on his world tour after losing to Canelo Alvarez, you know, blew out some no-hoper in one round the way he was supposed to. But there's questions. It's like, all right, is he just riding high on the Canelo money, or is this guy for real? And then Shiraz is like, all right, was that all smoke and mirrors, or can this guy really fight? And it was just the weight that gave him the issue. But altogether, I mean. That's a cool main event. I like it.
Who had Edgar Berlanga taking on the toughest test at once of all the 168 pounders right now? I know I didn't. I know a lot of fans out there.
That was not in my playbook.
Berlanga is taking on Shiraz, who was coming up from 160, would be a lot more comfortable at the weight at 168, had a hand injury at 160, was looking really good at 160 for a while. Very dangerous opponent for Edgar Berlanga. You'll take a look around at some of his contemporaries. Caleb Plant is fighting Jose Resendez, which is a setup to fight Jamal Charlo, who's fighting Cornflake Lamana. Canelo Alvarez is fighting William Skull. Christian Mabili is not fighting Diego Pacheco and vice versa. Diego Pacheco, I believe, is fighting Trevor McCombie. I mean, none of these guys are really fighting each other. So hats off to Edgar Berlanga for taking on a stiff test here in Hamza Shiraz. And I understand the criticisms. I can just see the comments right now. Damn, what are you talking about? Shiraz looked awful against Carlos Adames. He was gifted a draw in that fight. I get that. But the reasons I just said, moving up now, comfortable weight at 168. Had a hand injury in that fight. Take a look at the picture of his hand with Adames. There was a lot of factors that went into that Adames fight. Do I think Shiraz is as good as everyone was hyping him up to be? No, I don't. But I also don't think he was as bad as we saw in that performance with Adames. The same thing can be said for Berlanga. Like, we don't exactly even know what he is at the highest level. He goes 12 with Canelo, which in his mind was some type of victory, a moral victory. He has that knockout streak against complete cans. Whenever he was forced to step up, the knockout streak went away. So I think it's a perfectly even match, and there's a lot at stake here. If Berlanga, I'm sure, wants another shot at Canelo, this is a WBC eliminator too. And we know that Shiraz is in line to fight Canelo Alvarez. I mean, that was part of the plan. Like, I think Turkey actually named him when they signed Canelo Alvarez at 168. So I can see this all happening. Would I want to see Berlanga win and beat and go face Canelo again? Absolutely not. But should Shiraz win, he's going to be right into the driver's seat for a Canelo fight. Just think it's an evenly matched fight. It's intriguing. But I was a little shocked to see Berlanga take this when, you know, we were angling him to fight Plant, or we thought he would take another soft touch.
Yeah, no, this is definitely not a soft touch. Welcoming, you know, a guy that was so highly touted. It's funny, we have so many people who are really poo-pooing Shiraz because of one bad performance, but none of us ever talk about how good Carlos Adames is. Like, it's just like, oh, well, he just looked terrible against Adames.
It's one or the other.
He's a good fighter. Adames is a really good fighter. He's a world champion for a reason. And I thought Adames fought a very smart fight that night, and Shiraz just didn't show up. I think part of the excuse that they have is that he was killing himself to make the weight, you know, really big guy for 160, which I was always surprised he was able to make the weight comfortably, which apparently he wasn't, because he's huge. What is he? Six? I was just looking at his.
He's tall. Box.
He's 6'3", 75-inch reach. Damn. He looks taller than that, but still, it's still big for a middleweight.
What are you leaning in this fight?
I lean towards the bigger guy in Berlanga. Because
bigger in terms of what, just like girth,
being
pause.
A true super middleweight. he's been there longer, so he's comfortable at the weight, but also he's a big 68 pounder. He comes down from very, very heavy. He looked huge when he fought Canelo. He looks big when he fights every, I mean, he's a really big 68 pounder. So he's the bigger guy. It's his weight class. He's welcoming Shiraz up, and we just haven't seen Shiraz at 68, and all of the physical gifts that Shiraz had at 60, he gives up a little bit at 68.
Yeah, good point.
6'3" is not huge for 68. It's huge for 60. You don't see a lot of 6'3" middleweights. But 68 pounders, like, yeah, there's some big, tall 68 pounders. So I got to see him operate at 168. And I think Berlanga is a tough guy to be welcomed into a weight class, a new weight class.
Will Berlanga get credit for beating Shiraz? Or is everyone just like, oh, Shiraz is a hype job? You know, another British, there hasn't been a British star in years. So whenever we see someone half decent, we kind of put them on a pedestal. So if Berlanga goes in there and let's say he has a good couple of rounds, wins a decision, are we like, all right, Berlanga, you know, the heat's off you for a little bit? You know, we're looking at you as a serious contender here.
Nope. He's not going to get the credit. He'll get the credit from us. He'll get the credit from you and I. He'll get the credit from boxing people, because Shiraz, I do believe, is he as good as we thought? Probably not, but I still think he's very good. And that would be a good win, a really good win for Berlanga if he is to win. But the boxing public is gonna be like, Shiraz is a hype train, you know, he was no good, he was exposed against Adames, so what? Berlanga beat him. But that's boxing for you.
I like to fight.
I do.
I don't care that it's the main event. Shakur's not, like, whatever. If they're all on the same card, does it really matter? I understand it's like a boxing thing, and it's like, oh, it's got to be the main event. Like, at least it's on the same card. I can understand if it was taken off the card. But, I mean, yeah, Stevenson Zepeda is a title fight, and Baranga Hamza is a title eliminator. That doesn't bother me too much, but...
But to your point, Dan, it's like, it's a bit of a pick 'em fight. So it's a good matchup with a lot of intrigue. But also, Berlanga is the New York guy. The fight's in New York. I think that's a big part of why. It should be on the Puerto Rico Day Parade. It's not, obviously. That's in June, and this fight's in July. But you put Berlanga, you get the Boricuas, you get the New Yorkers to come out for you know, this fight for New York. I think it sells too. It's a good card. You got Berlanga at the top. He still has a lot of eyes on him. A lot of people are gonna show up. I think that was maybe the reason, or probably the reason, why he was put at the top of the bill and not Shakur. But yeah, I mean, Shakur Zepeda is the more important fight if you're looking at it in terms of rankings and titles as a title fight. It's a fight that we've wanted for a while. We want it less now than before the Tevin Farmer fights, but it's still an important fight.
Well, now that it's here, I'm excited.
Yeah, hell yeah! I think it's still a good fight. Zepeda's a fan friendly guy in terms of style. Chances are Shakur makes this not a fan friendly fight, but that just shows you the levels that Shakur's at. And I think it's an important win for Shakur's career, because the only way that people are going to recognize how good he is if he beats guys that you think are really good. And I think a lot of the, especially Mexican fans, are behind Zepeda. Shakur does what he does. I mean, I'm going a little bit ahead, but that's what I assume is going to happen. That's important for Shakur. He needs these names on his record.
I'm just worried when it comes to Shakur. I'm worried about the hands. Yes. He was beating up on Josh Padley, and he was shaking both hands, and he's had numerous surgery on said hands. That's not a type of injury, and you can attest to this way better than I could. But just from being around box, not the type of injury that just gets better. You know, those things persist. And unless you're doing what Floyd was doing, allegedly, you know, dipping your hands into some type of, what was he dipping them in? Radioactive.
They were doing shots. I was doing everything. I mean,
dipping them.
Floyd was a billion-dollar athlete. So, you know, they did everything they could to protect those hands. And yes, Dan, you're right. My hands, till my I broke my thumb on my last fight. Like, my hands were never not a problem. In the Conor Benn fight, I broke my right thumb in the first or second round. It's just, when you have hand problems, you have hand problems. It's like power. You know, like, oh, you're born with power. It's like, yeah, you're born with power. Yeah, chin, you're born with a chin. Hand problems, you're born with hand problems. Once you, if you have that, you're going to have that your whole career.
Yeah, it's just genetics, you know. It's like, you know, fighters are blessed with certain physical attributes, and having strong hands and hands that don't crumble and hands that don't. I mean, that's the basis of the sport. If you have brittle hands and you keep hurting them. Obviously, he had the hand surgery before somewhat recently. That's why one of those Zepeda fights fell through. And then I can't get that out of my mind. If the Padley fight with him, he still got the stoppage, but him, you know, shaking those hands, didn't have to get any type of procedure, as far as I know, after the Padley fight. But that's the one thing that creeps into my mind with Shakur. Obviously, if you listen to the show long enough, we're very big fans of his. But it's the only thing that only a little bit of doubt that I put in there, along with the, you know, him not exactly stepping on the gas pedal. But Zepeda just comes forward and says, you know what? He's not going to hurt me. I'm not going to outbox him. I'm going to have to stop Shakur. I'm going to apply so much pressure on Shakur that he's going to have to throw more punches than he is used to doing, and potentially injure a hand, or potentially, you know, get compromised. And then Zepeda has to figure, I could do something late in this fight. That's the road to victory, I think, for Zepeda, is unbelievable pressure. You're not getting knocked out, and just apply, and then hope that Stevenson breaks down.
His hand on your face.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it is. That's at least I think.
But even then, is that going to be enough? Because, you know, we've seen Shakur box with hurt hands, and even if he's not hitting you, he's so hard to hit that he can make you look silly and have you fall off balance, whatever. I'm more concerned about them actually getting to fight night, because Shakur gets hurt in training too. I mean, then we don't even get to the fight, which would be a real shame. But I'm keeping fingers crossed that we get there, because this is a good fight. This is an important fight for the weight class. A year ago, this was like, we want this fight.
Yeah, because right? Zepeda was at a fever pitch.
He was tearing, mowing people down like hot knife through butter. And then you know, enter Tevin Farmer. And now now the question marks come out gone wrong. Everywhere. Gone wrong. And you got the fight.
When he beat he blew through Giovanni Cabrera. He blew through Maxi Hughes, who's a sturdy guy. He blew through Mercito Hesta. He knocked out Jamie Arbidola. I mean, these were all like quicks. Second round, sixth round, fourth round, third round. He went on a four-fight streak where he didn't see the second half of the fight. And he was throwing 100 punches around.
With all tough, durable guys, too. Those weren't bumps. Those are guys that can actually fight.
Well, he fought Farmer. I mean, the Riyadh one, he probably made so much money for the first Farmer fight in Saudi. That was that 5-on-5 Mexican Latino night. And then the rematch with Farmer was just biding some more time. And so he fights here with Shakur on July 12th. And Chris, you brought up that's in New York. There's no location right now, and I'm hearing a lot of crazy stuff because this is a Ring Magazine card. They like to make big splashes. Barclays Center has a Keisha Cole concert. MSG is hosting Taylor Serrano the day before. So it's going to be kind of hard to
weekend in the garden. I doubt that.
I don't think they could even do that. I mean, there's stuff you have to like use. You have to the signage. You have to use like usually they block it out. If you go to the MSG website, there's some type of tour experience. They're calling it on tickets on sale for July 12th. But I've never really heard of the big room being used twice in one weekend for two major fights. Usually they don't like to do that. And you may know about this. I think that certain promoters put blocks on locations. Yes. Mm-hmm. So like, because they don't want to compete with a potential another card. So like MVP or any other promoter will do that. They'll, you know, you can't have another boxing event in this venue for the next like 30 days. I mean, I've heard of that. Have you heard of that?
I have heard of that. I've heard of promoters potentially blocking. I've heard of them. I mean, sometimes just things just fall through in terms of trying to get, you know, trying to get use a date or whatever. But yeah, the intentional block is definitely there. Or there's like an exclusivity, you know, that I can see that as well. Like you can't have another boxing event, like you said, ticket sales. You're gonna hurt our potential ticket sales.
Hurt the gate.
Doing double boxing.
Yeah. How about Central Park?
I heard that.
Central Park.
That one makes a lot more sense than Times Square. I mean, Central Park.
A lot more real estate.
Central Park in July in the summer in New York, that's awesome.
Yeah, the Great Lawn is awesome.
Concerts out there?
Yeah.
That would be awesome.
Yeah. I've been to some concerts there. They do like the one at the end on Labor Day or in the fall. It's like a big global something. They have the stage, they have the location, they've done plenty of concerts there. And that fits the narrative of what Ring Magazine's trying to do and Turkey's trying to do is these like, you know, Alcatraz or Times Square or you know, some of the other locations they've floated
Times Square, I'm not going to. Central Park, I'll show up. I'll go to that show.
I did apply. They did send out a media application for May 2nd. I did apply for it. Still waiting to hear back. If I do get in, I will go.
Time's a ticking, buddy. Time's a ticking.
Yeah, I don't know what goes on there. Now, Turkey, I don't know if he likes us or not. He did tweet at me yesterday, Turkey. I tweeted about how everyone's working together on this card. You know, Matchroom, PBC, Golden Boy, Queensberry, Salida, Eye of the Tiger, and Warriors Boxing are all represented on this card. Nice. But I didn't mention Ring Magazine. I think, and Turkey replied, and he said, "The Ring card!" Exclamation point. So, is he throwing shade at me? I don't think so.
No, that doesn't sound like shade. That sounds like... Cool. Here we are. Yeah, this is what this is.
All right.
He's hammering home that this is a ring card, and the ring is here to stay.
He has tweeted at us.
Shows are this good. Yeah, several times.
He has tweeted us before, and not big fan. I don't know if I do see May 2nd, I will extend my hand for a handshake. Will he extend it back?
I got asked about that. Like, what do you think about, you know, Turkey? Is an interview tweeting. I was like, oh my god, I'm media. It's someone who's in the game of boxing and promotion. Like, if you follow the sport, you're gonna hear my voice. You're gonna see what I'm saying. You're gonna see my face. So I think it's a good place to be. You know,
I've never said anything about him personally. Never will. I never address anyone personally. Right. I mean, we have been a very neutral podcast, and just as we are on everything else. So the TKO coverage I thought we've provided has been very neutral, very looking out for both sides.
Timely, We're giving the information that we have at the time. This is very timely. We do two shows a week. We can only give you the information that is available.
Well, there's a lot of podcasts that did not cover the TKO announcement, the TKO pay scale. TKO just ignored it. And I think fans deserve to hear something about it. Whether you agree with us or you don't agree with us, I had some people last episode, because I do read the feedback, say, Dan, I can't believe you're in favor of the TKO amendment. I was like, how did you come to that conclusion? I was playing devil's advocate to make it for a better listen. I was just trying to say, like, hey, listen, a lot of these promoters, they don't even follow the Ali Act. There were so many dance arounds and so many move arounds. Like, the guy that helped write it, Lou DiBella, who we'll talk about in a second, has even said that you can work around it. He got that guy wrote the Ali Act, became a promoter, and then skirted around his own the own act that he helped write.
Well, it's funny. I think people forget that this is a show for entertainment. So if we both just agree on everything all the time, it's not so. So we you know, a little devil's advocate, a little pushback is welcome. So we go back and forth. You got a stance. Sometimes I'll take the opposite stance. Yeah, I have a stance. Not that we're like not saying what we really believe, but there's got to be a little back and forth, a little bit.
I'm trying to think as a fighter. Like, there are some fighters out there that are going to run to a TKO league.
1,000%. Well, a lot of fighters don't have a choice, but you know, you got to take what you can get. Beggars cannot be choosers, and most fighters in the beginning are begging. So, because we just don't have, we're broke. We're broke and hungry. We'll take whatever. We'll take the scraps until we're king. But that's the sport of boxing. That's the beauty of it.
You know, another place I would like to see a fight at, and I've talked about this a couple times, is Arthur Ashe Stadium, where they carry the U.S. Open. I went this past summer for the first time.
So it's beautiful.
The grounds are amazing. The stadium, the arena, is unreal. And they only use it 2 weeks out of the entire year. Nothing else goes down on the U.S. Open grounds in any of those stadiums or in any of those arenas, because that's how they want it. They did one event. AEW Wrestling was allowed to do an event a few years back at Arthur Ashe Stadium. Out of all the entities out there, they let AEW. There must have been some type of connection there. But the WTA, it's like the Tennis Association. Their thing is, like, we don't want anyone coming into Arthur Ashe. You know, they have a little prestigious air to them, kind of like golf and Augusta and the Masters and all that. So I would love to see a fight at Arthur Ashe Stadium. It has a retractable roof. It's not a bad seat in the house. It's centrally located. It's right next to LaGuardia.
Well, hopefully the ring is listening and they can get in there. If they listen to our show, then maybe we'll have the announcement. Then we'll know for sure that we're being listened to by the Ring Magazine people.
Hello, everybody at the Ring Magazine. Mike Coppinger.
Arthur Ashe Stadium.
Yeah, it's a sick place, man. It's really cool, but I think it's gonna be something different, which is, I kind of like that wrinkle from Ring, and I kind of obviously love this card. Obviously the fights are why we'll watch, and if the fights are good, that's what's going to be a successful thing. But I mean, this adds a little bit of intrigue and adds some fun to it. It's like, oh, where's it going to be? You know, MSG's booked, Barclays is booked. Okay, that knocks out the two biggest venues in New York City, so let's get creative here. But Central Park, something I heard dangled. Arthur Ashe, I put it like 2% chance of that happening. But more importantly, is that all these promoters are working together. Mm-hmm. And that's the great thing here. We've got some PBC fighters on here. Puelo, who's fighting Subriel Matias. Alberto Puelo last fought on a PBC card. His last fought, a few fights on PBC cards. He beat Sandor Martin. That was on the Tank Davis Lamont Roach card. Subriel Matias was with Matchroom. He was with PBC. Now he's with Salida Promotions. He's coming off of
Matchroom cut Matias when he lost to Paro?
I believe so.
Oh wow.
Yeah, then he went independent. Then he went picked up with Salida. So Salida's represented
back
here.
In the title fight. Look at that.
I thought, I know. He's 22 and 2.
It's a winnable fight too. This is a very winnable fight for him.
He's 22-2, Matias, with 22 knockouts. Had the one blip to Para, had another blip to the Greek guy. Petros, something like that. He avenged it and knocked the guy out in his next win, the next fight. But Puelo, I like Puelo. I think he's very beatable. Like everyone's looking at this fight as being some barn burner. Like Puelo's kind of in boring fights, and Matias will bring the action.
Yeah, he's a disruptor. He's not a. I mean, he gets into scraps with guys that he's that he can do with their power. I thought he was really impressive when he fought Gary Antoine Russell, especially if we look at how good Antoine Russell has looked lately.
What's he doing next? Stud.
Defending his title. He's a legit world champion at 140. I mean, he's probably going to sit out for a while because of who he's with. But he's
performance of the year.
Yeah, man. He's really tough. But you know, Puelo is shown to be pretty versatile. You know, he beat Akhmadov. Akhmadov is not an easy out for anyone. He's got a horrible record. Poor guy. Like he came out of the amateurs and fought like super super tough guys early on. Not a bunch of title fights, never won them, but very, very tough guy. So he's got to win over him. He's got the win over Gary Antoine Russell, which in hindsight is like amazing. Sandor Martin is a tough style no matter who you are to fight. So he's fought boxers. He's fought boxer punchers. He's fought punchers. Puelo is amassing a pretty good resume right now, but he does tend to get pulled into scraps at times. Again, will trade. You trade with a guy, a guy like Matias, and you're going to wake up in the dressing room. He's a dangerous, dangerous guy. But he can also be beat. I've seen him get beat in the pocket by Petros. I've seen him get outboxed by Liam Powell. So there's a lot of ways to beat Matias, but it's a tough out because the guy can punch.
Right. I love that fight. 140. 140 is a fun division with Gary Antoine Russell looking really good, with potentially having Shakur go up to 140. That's in the mix as well. David Morrell is fighting Aiman Katiev. Morrell's coming off the Benavidez loss. Morrell is represented by Warriors Boxing. Katiev is a Eye of the Tiger guy. Going back to Shakur Stevenson, this was a surprising little nugget. Shakur Stevenson and Matchroom have parted ways after just one fight. The Josh Padley fight was the only fight under Shakur's partnership with Eddie Hearn. They had big plans.
What a fight that was.
Right? Supposed to be Floyd Schofield, was supposed to be Cepeda, was supposed to be a lot of things for Shakur. But he announces that his manager, James Prince, has now hired Lou DiBella to be Shakur Stevenson's promoter for the next event, which is William Cepeda in this July fight. Obviously, Lou DiBella, longtime promoter, longtime HBO boxing
executive. Staple.
New York staple. This is a fight in New York. It's going to help with media, it says. It's going to help with commission stuff. He's going to just be a New York guy in the corner of Shakur Stevenson for this fight. A lot to unpack here because, you know, I know Lou very well. He is a friend of the family and he's a friend of mine. I would never in a million years guess that he would have a link up with Shakur Stevenson. Would never really think that Shakur and Hearn had any bad blood here, or not bad blood, but just bad business. It looks like Matchroom could have extended this deal for one more fight, and they did not pick up the option. So there's a lot to unpack here, but I was like right away, I was like, Lou DiBella, that's good for Lou, but like not exactly the name I thought, but you know, tie in New York, I don't know, kind of makes some sense here.
Yeah, it's weird, but we live in a weird time. You know, we're seeing, like you said, this card, we're getting all these promoters coming together, and like you don't even really need promoters anymore, these fighters. Man, I wish I was around. I wish this was going on when I was around. I would have been bouncing all over the place.
Seismic shift. Keep going.
Yeah. Because everything back when I was coming, I was like, you had to be in long-term deals. Mm-hmm. I remember when guys just started signing like 2-3 fight deals. Like that was like a new thing in the 2010s. And I got into that at the tail end of my career. I was getting like one-off single fights, a couple fight deals. Like I did PBC, I did a three or four fight deal with. Matchroom, same thing. It's like all these different ways to do it. But back when I was coming up, when I was first coming up, everything was long-term deals. You sign, you're with a guy for 3 years, maybe 4.
I've heard of like 7 fight deals.
Yeah. We're seeing more and more of that, which is how it should be. But, and you're seeing promoters now willing to cut guys where like my promoter wouldn't let me go. If I was trying to buy out of my contract a million times, he wouldn't let me do it. And you know, now it's like, these guys are just like, oh, okay. Well, you don't want to do it anymore. Okay. That's cool. Part ways, go somewhere else. But these guys, like with this Lou DiBella thing, like you're Shakur Stevenson. Do you really need a promoter at this point? I understand you're linking up with a New York guy because you're fighting in New York and you're not really, you know, don't have the New York pull. So it's probably a one fight deal, I would assume. And I don't know. I don't hate it. I don't hate it. If fighters can give up less of their purse to promoters, yes, then it's a good thing.
It's you need a promoter on record, and if you can have one for a flat rate, which I believe is the deal with Lou and Shakur, that's one less exorbitant fee that you have for Shakur Stevenson. Now, if you have a guy in Turki Alshik who is financing these fights, and you can, James Prince is the manager of Shakur. If he can negotiate directly with Turki, what the heck do you need a promoter for at this point? Or why do you need to be tied to a promoter for a certain amount of years when it's shown now that Turki will literally work with every promoter? Almost every promoter is, besides Top Rank, is represented on this card. So this is, I think, a very shrewd move here from Shakur. He gets rid of any long-term obligation or any, it wasn't that long, but any obligation to Eddie Hearn in Matchroom. And now he is technically a free agent. I know that he'll have DiBella here with him for this July 12th and the lead up for that. But he is technically a free agent right now. And he can, from here, he could go to 140 and fight some of the names that are underneath this Ring magazine, Turkey, whole team right now. He could stay at 135. And the bigger picture of all this is Shakur Stevenson leaving Matchroom. Does that make a fight with Tank Davis easier to make for even this year? Because I think a big holdup with Tank and Shakur was potentially having Matchroom involved. So if now Matchroom is not involved and Shakur is technically a free agent, I don't see why we can't revisit a Tank versus Shakur fight for the end of 2025. I understand it always will come down to Tank Davis. But I'll tell you what, this makes it a little bit easier, I think.
Well, it's funny because when Shakur signed with Matchroom, we were like, ah, there goes the Tank fight. That's up in smoke.
For at least a year, because it was only I thought it was a 2 or 3 fight deal.
Yeah, but that can always get extended. Also, it just looked right. We're gonna have to go a different route now.
It gave it a little more of an obstacle.
A big obstacle. But now that obstacle has been removed. Now the issue is going to be the fighters themselves. Actually, whether it's Tank, I think it is Tank that needs to make the fight happen. But Tank's got to get past Lamont Roach. I mean, he's got that fight coming up. Because what happens if he loses to Roach? Do we get a third? Is that going to happen? That's probably what's going to happen. And a final nail in the coffin, depending on how the fight goes. If it's another razor close decision and Roach wins, you don't think there's going to be a rubber match? Or it wouldn't even be a rubber match because Tank didn't win the first fight. I don't know how close we are even to a Shakur fight. Now, if Tank goes out there and blitzes Roach and gets him out of there early or dominant, whatever, is it possible we see at the end of the year? Then now we're talking because, the momentum will be behind Tank. But also, because what now? The Tank fight's going to be in August?
I've heard that it's now going to be in early August.
Right. So Tank's probably not going to fight again this year. That's the thing. Like the guy does not fight often. Does not fight often.
Even when he messed everything up. He messed everything up by not messing it, but if he would have fought Roach in January, we would have been looking. He would have a lot more road ahead of him in terms of getting a bunch of fights in 2025. I never thought the Roach rematch was going to happen so quickly. When I heard June, I was like, wow, that's no April, way. May. That's 3 months. Come on. I mean, that's crazy. Like I've heard of 4, rematches, 6 is kind of standard. But 3 months, that's crazy. So this August is a little more of a normal time frame. It wasn't the most grueling fight, but they went 12 hard rounds, and it was a long training
fight.
Camp.
It was a tough fight.
It was a tough fight. Did take a ton of punishment, but I was just
Tank
thinking.
Tank always pushes fights off anyway. How many Tank dates have moved?
Oh, it's always the most fluid thing in the world. And working alongside PBV.com, and they work alongside PBC, it's crazy. Even crazier now to keep tabs on it because it's like we're trying to hash out our schedule, and we're basing that around Tank Davis, which is a wild thing. Love Tank, but yeah, that's the one thing about him is he's gonna at the beat of his own drum. So it looks like we're gonna get that in August. But it did have me thinking, like someone tweeted at me like, oh well, didn't Lou and Al Haymon have a bad falling out? Like I love Lou, but I don't see this being a long term thing. Like Shakur didn't leave Matchroom on a 2-fight deal to sign a long term deal with DiBella. This is fight by fight. After July 12th, Shakur has so many options now. It's very, very smart on Shakur's deal. He's 27 years old. He doesn't have a long-term contract attached to him. He can go to PBC now and say, hey, okay, let's revisit this again, and let's try to get this fight going. Because Shakur has said it time and time again, this is the fight I want. Everyone knows it. He probably even wants it even more now after he saw the Tank looking a little vulnerable against Roach. But I think this helps it. I think this is when I first saw this news, I was like, wow. My first thing I went to was Shakur Tank could potentially happen this year.
Listen, Shakur needs that fight. And until Shakur gets that fight, I think that's the fight that if he get that's going to make him a breakout star. Because Shakur is that guy, like his style, you're not going to love him for his style because he's not the most like, it's not a barn burn. It's not a Turo Gotti style fight. The guy dominates. He's so good. He controls distance. He makes very good fighters look bad. But he's got to beat your favorite fighter. That's how Shakur Stevenson becomes your favorite fighter. He's going to beat your favorite guy. And then you're going to be like, yo, this guy is the guy. But it's kind of like how Floyd was. Floyd had to beat so many good fighters on the way to being the face of the sport. And people hated him for a long time. They didn't like his style. They said he was too defensive. People still say that. But if you name all the champions he beat along the way, you can't deny it. So Shakur is that level of talent. He's got to get in with all these guys. He's got to be able to beat everybody. I remember when Floyd beat Diego Corrales. That was when you were really like, whoa. Like, because Diego was a destroyer. Diego was very much like a Tank Davis type. He was knocking out really good fighters. He was scary. He was a puncher. And then you get in there with Floyd, and you got 200-feet guys. And it's like, Diego's such a puncher and whatever. And, you know, Floyd's a good boxer, but Diego's just is relentless. And Floyd dismantles him. And that's when you really looked at it, like, wow, this guy's talent is on a different level. And I think Shakur is going to go along that same thing. It's taken a lot longer. Obviously, there's been a lot more hangups for him than Floyd. Floyd had a pretty smooth transition going all the way up to the top. But I think Shakur has a lot of fight career left. We're going to have to see that. But he's got to get these fights. He's got to get these guys in the ring with him.
He's only 27.
Right.
He just came on the scene really early. Like, I mean, Floyd wasn't in these major big fights until he was 30. You know, Shakur's a 3-division world champion at 27. It's Tank who's the one who's now 30 and should be entertaining these types of fights. You know, the Jake Paul rumors turned out to be more than rumors. That was going to happen. Jake Paul was going to fight Gervonta Davis in some type of exhibition this summer. And, you know, I'm sure they'll revisit it too. I'm sure they will revisit that. But who knows? Maybe Tank realizes, you know, I should fight Shakur now. And if he's serious about getting out of the sport in a year or two, you know, why not go for the biggest fights and make the most amount of money? And Shakur, too. You know, time, he's 27. He's got hand injuries and all sorts of things. Let me get this fight now while I'm at my peak. You know, and
if Tank does fight Jake Paul, he at least fight all the guys that are around your weight class first. if you're going out the door to fight Jake Paul and make a boatload of money, I get that. But you got to handle business in your weight class first.
Yeah, you would think. That's the traditional thought process of a lot of fighters over the last 50 years. But we're, like you said, living in a different, way different time. But does this make promoters marginalized? I'm not really upset about that. I'm not upset about the idea of promoters losing power and more power being put into the hands of fighters. But, you know, it's taking power away from Hearn, potentially, or taking power away from a promoter, but it's just putting more power into the hands of Turkey and the guys that are financing this fight. They are de facto promoter now in all this, but it's just one. I mean, it's one less fee, or it's just not having to tie yourself up into long-term contracts. But I like promoters being marginalized.
I'm not a big fan of promoters. There's no secret about that. Being a former fighter, but anything that puts more money in the pockets of fighters, and not just right now, long term, I'm happy about. I don't know how long this whole thing is going to last. We are in a weird phase of. The world that is boxing right now, the lifespan that is boxing. But for right now, things are looking good for the fighters because they're getting the big fights. They're getting big paydays. They're getting a lot of exposure. So I like all of that stuff. But I want this to be long lasting, not just a flash in the pan, smash and grab job where, you know, you get a new shiny promotional arm comes in and throws out a bunch of money, changes the market, flips things upside down, and then disappears. As long as this is here to stay and things stay positive and stay good, I'm all for it.
Yeah, I can see Shakur entering into the fray with a lot of the guys that Riyadh and and Ring have cornered already. You know, whether it's Haney, Teofimo, I think Ryan's too big. I can see Shakur doing that. He has a very good spot. He can either stick with the turkey plan and go to 140, or he could try to really pursue the tank fight, both of which are going to be very lucrative for him and should be good. Did you see that Golden Boy released the Ryan Garcia, Devin Haney full fight on YouTube this morning? Already had 100,000 views this morning. Where is it?
Why did it need to be released? It wasn't out there.
So it comes a rights thing with YouTube. Obviously, it was a year, so there was probably something in the contract where after a year you can put this out on YouTube in its full length. But it has 130,000 views as of less than 24 hours ago. But it's so funny. It says, on this day, Devin Haney, the title versus Ryan Garcia in all caps. It won't be erased from history is the title on YouTube. So let it be. I went back and watched it because I hadn't watched the full fight since being ringside.
What'd you think on the review?
What I thought on the review was Haney deserves a lot more credit, I thought, for getting up and fighting back and winning the first. I didn't realize that Garcia rocked him so quickly into the first round.
Yeah,
but right then away. Haney recovered pretty well and won the next three or four rounds because mm-hmm. Garcia is just it wasn't in good shape. Like Garcia fought in 30-second spurts and he gave up rounds, but then you cannot deny how Ryan Garcia ended the fight. That the part about me, like watching it back from just sitting on the couch, is that Ryan did not fade in this fight. He ended the fight strong, and you can debate about how he ended the fight strong, what was running through his system and all that. But you know, he had two knockdown rounds, and I think rounds 10 and 11, which just cemented it. Which, I mean, it was a very wacky scorecard because there was a point taken away too, because Garcia hit him Haney while he was down, which was a crazy swing. So it was like a 9-8 round in there. But I wanted to come on here and be like, oh, wow, we got to give a little more credit to Haney. Then, you know, Ryan put the gas pedal on there in the last two rounds. But
well, I think it's good that's released. I think people forget, like, we only see the highlights of Ryan smashing Haney and dropping him. But it was actually a real fight, and it was a close fight. And Haney boxed well.
Majority decision.
Showed a ton of heart. And you know, getting up from those shots, fighting a bigger man. But, you just watch it. Ryan turning his back over and over and over again, like walking away, running away at times. Like it was not really the majority of the fight's not really a pretty look.
It was a lot of holding.
It was an ugly fight in between all the good action. But that fight is best in highlights. Watching it fall all the way through, it's not a great fight. You know, it was great that night because it was so much drama. Right. But in terms of like a beautiful specimen of the sport, certainly not.
Yeah, it did well at the pay-per-view buys, but not, you know, a lot of people didn't watch it on pay-per-view. They caught highlights on Instagram. They caught highlights mm-hmm. afterwards, and you can slice and dice.
People post like, "Oh, Ryan killed it."
Exactly.
Ryan dropped everything. I know. That's not true.
You can slice and dice any fight to make it look really good on like a 5-minute highlight reel. But if you went back and watched the whole thing, I give Haney credit for getting up every single time, and he did fight well. And I am looking forward to the rematch should they do it, and if Ryan is. You know, can get back to boxing full rounds, which I don't know he's ever really done. But that's gonna be next week.
He's never really done.
Right. He didn't jab at all in that fight. He just fought 30 seconds of each round. He has enough seconds to count though. That's what I mean. He has enough talent, enough God given skills where that right hook is so freaking nasty. Caught Haney.
His right hand's actually pretty good too, yeah.
Haney went down numerous times in that fight. They didn't call a few of them. Harvey Dock had a rough night.
I mean, he was hurt most of the fight. Certain times you get hurt, dude, it takes a while to recover. And I think every time that Devin did get, like, right the ship, he would get rocked again. And sometimes you get hit early on in a fight, and your chin is weak the rest of the fight. Like, you can't take the same punches anymore that you even normally could, and we will be able to again later. That's chins are funny like that. Every punch is different.
He rocked Garcia a few times too, just not enough. I thought We'll get to that when we do. All right, Chris, weekend results. We're going to talk about Ben Whitaker picking up a round two stoppage. Was it quick stoppage? I thought so. A lot of antics afterwards from Whitaker. He cried after the fight. Ben Shalom saying no one's had it worse than him. Whitaker's talking about being bullied online, which is interesting because he chose this persona. He chose to be the heel. He was showboating on lesser skilled fighters. That's how he got onto my radar. And then he has the setback with Cameron and everything that happened there. Did he think that everyone was going to be understanding? Just adds to the intrigue of this guy because we're sitting here talking about him. But he gets the win, which should be the most important thing about this, is him winning. But we're talking about a lot of other stuff, which I think will ultimately keep Ben Whitaker in the public eye of boxing fans.
Well, you know, all the drama aside, his talent is very, very there. It's very visible. He showed that, you know, in that fight. He fought smart. He had a guy in front of him that gave him a lot of trouble the first time they fought. You know, it ended in dubious circumstances, but he was having trouble before that. He looked good on Saturday. He didn't have any trouble dealing with Cameron this time. But in terms of, you know, I don't want to talk about all the other antics. I want to talk about his skills. The guy's good. Yeah, you can talk about that. The guy's good.
Well, it's all intertwined. How good do you think he really is? Because he hasn't, the step up was supposed to be Cameron, and that was still, he was a 16-1 favorite in the first fight. And the scorecards had it even until the time of the quote-unquote ankle injury, which a lot of fans believe it wasn't not really an ankle injury. He shows up in the wheelchair
I'll tell you right now, it was an ankle injury.
That's what I mean. That's the reason why he's getting so much stick. Add in the fact that, you know, he went viral for showboating in the ring against a journeyman. Mm-hmm. So there are some people that are not going to like that. And there are some people that are going to like that. And that's the path that he chose. I believe that's the decision that you make. So when you have this setback with Cameron in the first fight, when you were a 16-1 favorite, and you come back, you're still a 3-1 favorite in the rematch, and you blow him out. I thought you looked good. The stoppage was early, whatever. He was going to beat the guy no matter what, I thought. I thought that he is talented. But my question is like, how talented is he? Because you struggled with a 16-1 favorite, and we haven't really seen you in there with anyone that's up to your ability. And the one time it was somewhat of a step up, you know, you looked for a way out of the fight.
Dude, that was a big step up. This was his 10th fight. It was his 9th fight when he fought a guy with 29 fights who'd never been stopped, who split decision with Lyndon Arthur. Like, Cameron was a really big step up. And I think the issue here is that the guys who made the odds were overestimating what level Ben Whitaker was at. The guy has less than 10 fights. You can't make him a 16-1 favorite over a legit guy who has, you know, fought some really tough opposition and never been stopped. It was a bit of a wake-up call, I think. You know, you got to pump the brakes on Ben Whitaker. This guy's not fighting for a world title this year. You know, he still has a lot more development to go. So I think, yeah, there's a lot of hype around him. But listen, we live in a clip culture. He was able to, you know, get his name so big and so known because of those clips of him, you know, abusing and bullying Journeyman. But but yeah, listen, you can't deal with that. You got to deal with what comes with that. If you want, like you said, exactly, you said it perfectly. If you're going to be the heel, you got to be that guy. You got to dance with the girl you brought to the ball. If you're going to be the heel, guess what? You're going to get criticism. You got to be able to take it.
Right. He starts crying after the fight, and he says, I was bullied online. Right. Back to what you said. Like, you can't be the heel and the victim.
No.
You can't. It was one or the other.
Well, in this society, I think you can, because victimhood is like, it's currency at this point.
Yeah, I hate that. I hate victim mentality. But be the heel. Like, the heel works in boxing.
It works.
You know, he stuck his, even after the fight, he sticks his head into the other side's corner, look like he spit on them. The Cameron's corner comes out and says, no, it wasn't spit. Sure looked like it, but it wasn't. That was a whole conversation. Then you have Ben Shalom, his promoter, saying no one's had it worse. This guy's been through a lot in the last year. Like, dude, you chose this life. You chose the life of, you knew it was going to come with criticism, especially UK fans. Like, they don't like the showboarding. Like, Prince Nassim Abed, right, when he first came onto the scene, they hated that stuff. It worked here. It sold over here in the U.S., and he ends up being a Hall of Fame talent, Nassim Ahmed. Like, the jury's still out for Whitaker, but, man, I mean, we're talking about the guy, and we're going to continue. I'm going to watch his next fight and see what he's really about. I'm curious what his next fight will be. You know, so names like Willie Hutchinson floated, Dan Aziz. Like, I don't think they'll go that far.
No.
That's like, then we're looking at like domestic level. Like, there's a lot of people out there that believe that this guy won't ever make it out of fringe contender, you know, status. But I don't know. I thought the stuff afterwards, like, you're not gonna get any sympathy from me. You're not gonna get any sympathy from boxing fans. Don't play the sympathy role.
No,
be the heel. Yeah,
doesn't work in boxing.
Right, but yeah, I did spit on his corner, and yeah, I did do that. And you know what? If you don't like it, it's too bad. Like, no, don't start crying. I understand. I understand. It's a tough sport. You guys put your lives on the lines, and so much goes into it. And if he would have lost this fight, you know, you could make a case that his career could potentially be over before even started. I understand all of that, but once again, you have taken the extreme opposite route, and up until the first Cameron fight, where it went bad for you, and you made those decisions to showboat and draw attention that way. So when things don't go your way, of course there's going to be people all over your ass. So I think it's a learning lesson. He's got Andy Lee in his corner, like, who I think is one of the best trainers in the world.
Like that, especially for his body type. Andy Lee's really good with the long guys. Those long guys got some good power. He's got some good snap. But yeah, I mean, listen, like you said, I'm going to be watching his next fight. You know, I think stylistically, I think athletically, he's good. Can he go beyond, you know, just being the shtick? I don't know. We'll see. But, you know, that's what's great about boxing, man. You will be exposed no matter what. No matter who you are, what you bring to the party, you will be exposed.
Talking about exposed, Charles Conwell loses on Saturday night, 154-pound fight with Jorge Gonzalez Perez, who came in as a very live underdog. Conwell's his fourth fight in the last 12 months, which I kind of thought could have been a deterrent. But for Gonzalez Perez, it was also his fourth fight in the last 12 months. He's been on a winning streak. So Conwell loses, which really, really, really hurts him. It's a big step back for him. Because we've talked about this in the past, doesn't have a big promoter, or, you know, has Golden Boy, but doesn't have a big push behind him. Had to win these types of fights in order to keep rising the ranks at 154. If he won this fight, he was looking at a title fight very soon. But now he goes to the back of the line. But I mean, this is a major setback. I thought his game plan was bad. If they looked tired in there, you know, I tweeted that maybe fighting four times in a year. I know no one wants to hear this. Could be a bad thing for some. I got a lot of pushback on that. I don't think that's why he lost, but there's a lot of things that contribute, that factor into a loss.
Well, we saw that with Suras and Jaime Munguia. You know, yes. He got that extra fight in the end of the year, and he gets starched. There's a reason why guys don't fight throughout. There's a reason why Tank Davis fights twice a year. There's a reason why he pushes back these fights. Listen, guys, if you're not feeling up to training camp, if you're not at your full, you know, potential. You know, hey guys, push back fights, pull out of fights. You know, we love a guy who stays busy, but it doesn't always work out. Recently, it certainly has shown to not. So that's the thing. It's like, if you don't fight often enough, we see how the deleterious effects are. And then you see guys who fight almost too much, and you're seeing the effects there. So it could it be that? It could be, but it's a real shame because we were talking up Combo a lot last. I mean, everyone was. Yeah.
Dark Horse.
Last show.
Right. He's your prototypical dark horse, the guy that doesn't get any shine, the guy that doesn't, you know, exactly look so great, doesn't get all the push behind him and everything. So he was an easy guy to rally around in a really loaded division. It's not the end for him, but it's tough now because he has to, you know, he's going to drop in the rankings. And that was his only shot at getting a title shot, was climbing the rankings and being in a mandatory position.
I will say I did call his opponent's last two fights. He's tough. He's really, really tough. It's a tough out. He's a, you know, tall Mexican. He's a good puncher. He scored a first round KO on a fight in Glendale, and I called him top rank. And then he beat Kudratilo Abakukuarov. I can't even say his name.
Wow. Right.
But he's that guy's good. He's a tough fighter. He beat Louis Collazo a couple years ago, but I was impressed with that performance as well. He looked very dominant there. So. He didn't lose to nobody, but in terms of, you know, the boxing world level, it is kind of nobody. But it's a shame because there was a lot of hype behind Charles Conwell behind the scenes.
Well, you know, that just shows you how deep this division is. It's like a 20 deep division where guys like Jorge Gonzalez Perez are kind of floating around there and you know, anonymously, and can go in there and spoil everything for Conwell, who is, I would say, top eight. At 154, just goes more into the in line with this division. It's now, you know, it's a wacky and it's a very, very
loaded division. It's just deep and tough. It's just deep and tough, and you got to bring your A game every time out. The top 15 of that weight class is legit, super, super legit.
Yeah. Gabriella Fandora won in the main event. You know,
beast.
She's unreal, bro. She's beast. So good. 112 pounds. I want to see her move up and weight. No rush, but I want to see her move up and weight. And, you know, with Taylor and Serrano, you know, they're at the end of their rope.
Why do you want to see her go up and weight? Why? Like, who? Is there a reason? Or is there someone? Or are you just saying higher weight class? I
don't know. Maybe some more challenges at 115, 118.
I hate that push, though. Like, why do we always have to move on weight and fight, you know, a million different weight classes if you don't need to? We tend to force our fighters to move up. Be like, oh, go do it another weight class. Like, I mean, she's kicking ass where she's at. She's getting stoppages. We have a female world champion who's unified, and it's the getting knockouts. Like,
she's undisputed.
I don't know. She's undisputed. I don't want to move her up. If she can make the weight, healthfully, and she obviously is, keep her here.
She's tall. She's 5'9". I've been around her. She's tall. Obviously, her brother's super tall. Runs in the family. But I don't know. I'm thinking of some of the women that are at the, you know, the 130s.
Yeah, I did read somewhere that height was genetics. I read that somewhere. I do believe.
That's very true. My parents are short. I'm short. Damn it.
Damn it.
Your dad's pretty tall. I met him. You're pretty tall.
Yeah, pretty tall.
Yeah, I might have rushed to see her move up, but my point was maybe I just kind of combined these two things. I'm thinking of Taylor and Serrano exiting the sport very soon, and Gabriel Fandora is the heir apparent. She should be number one now, or in the top three pound-for-pound women fighter in the world. And then, you know, they're going to ask her for bigger fights, ask her, and you know, some of the bigger names are more towards that weight class. So are those bigger weights? So maybe we'll see, but good for her. I think she's awesome.
She's awesome. She's a great interview too. She's really, really, really sweet and nice and genuine. Well, just like her brothers, just, actually.
Yeah, man. They're just so down to earth. They're just so down to earth, and they just have
hardworking, not about the glitz of the glam, humble. Go out there and whip your ass. That's what you want in your champions.
There is room for that in the sport. There is opposite of Ben Whitaker is the Fandoras. Maybe the whipping ass part is the ultimate.
At the end of the day, it doesn't matter how you act as long as you whip ass. Good, bad, everything in between.
Put that on a t-shirt. End the show there. next, we're back at the end of the week with our Conor Ben Chris Eubank preview episode where we're going to figure that one out. I still haven't come up with my pick. Still haven't covered my pick. I know. Just got the CompuBox stats and the preview. The weight is going to come down to the weight is really tricky.
And it's not just like the weight is interesting because it's not just that it's at 160 or that
5 pound rehydration clause.
That's
five.
Crazy.
Like 10 is nuts. Five.
Five. It's crazy.
Right. Well, to get way deeper into that at the end of the week and much more, that's the end of our episode. Protect your hands at all times. Protect yourself at all times. Keep your hands up at all times. Stay out of the DMs. We're out.